Judge Flory, the Honorable Matthew E. Johnson presiding.
Good morning, counsel, and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. For the sake of the audio record, I will say that today's date is January 5, 2023. This panel of the court today has six cases set for today, three of which will be submitted with oral argument and three of which will be submitted without oral argument, solely on the briefs. All three cases are from Southern Minnesota, two cases from the 5th District, one case from the 3rd District. It's a good day to have Zoom, I believe. The first case is number A22-492, In Re the Marriage of Heinrichs versus Heinrichs. As counsel know, each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument, and appellant's counsel will have, in addition, 5 minutes for rebuttal argument. Counsel for appellant, you may introduce yourself and your client and then begin your argument.
Good morning, Your Honors. Opposing counsel, may it please the court. My name is Michelle Olson, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Leanne Heinrichs, who is the mother of the minor children. This case really boils down to kind of two major issues. One, whether or not the district court made proper findings under the legal analysis required in an endangerment motion, kind of the first step of that motion. And the second is more of an issue that seems to be a first impression issue. We couldn't find much case law on it, but we believe this court has the authority to kind of give some guidance on that. Specifically going into the first part of the argument is that the district court has failed to make proper findings related to the four major factors that have been cited in, and excuse me, I want to make sure I'm citing it correctly, but basically whether or not that an evidentiary hearing can be set, they are required in, as cited in Goldman, that there was a change of circumstances, that the modification would be serve the children's best interest, that the children are in present danger of physical health, emotional health, or emotional development, and that the benefits outweigh the detriments. Here, the court only discussed two of the four factors and said, because you didn't meet these two factors, I'm not going to make further analysis. That is an improper, I guess, finding. It is required to have all four. So,
no, counsel, I'd just like to stop you briefly, if I could. You're relying primarily on Goldman, but also Gunderson, as I recall.
That is correct.
Okay. So could you point me to the language that you find most persuasive? Because I don't read either opinion as saying that an analysis of all four factors is required to deny a motion to restrict. So
I don't.
Which is what happened here. Yeah.
I don't believe it explicitly states all four factors must be cited. However, to give proper appellate review to really determine whether or not an evidentiary hearing is needed, all four factors should be addressed. And I believe in Goldman, it says a district court is required under this section to conduct an evidentiary hearing only if the party seeking to modify a custody order makes a prima facie showing. And that is in Goldman at, I believe, page 284. The reason why I'm saying I think it does require all four, at least to determine that there were some findings, is because even if the court finds that maybe two of the factors are lacking, it really should explain why it finds it lacking, what evidence seems to be missing. In this case, the district court didn't say they were missing. The court just said it wouldn't address it, which makes it difficult because if the court were to reverse and say, yes, those first two factors are found, well, we have two other factors that have never been addressed, which makes it ripe for multiple appeals and piecemeal orders, which is not appropriate. That is why the courts want all four factors addressed, and it seems to be implied in Goldman and Gunderson, even though it's not explicit, that to deny a motion, you are required all four factors. It seems to be best practice and more beneficial to the courts overall to address all four. And again, we're not saying there needs to be extensive analysis, but there should be some analysis on all four factors if they are met or not to have that proper appellate review. In this case, like as I stated, I believe factors 2 and 4 were not properly addressed and they were ignored. It seemed to be stopped out because of that change in circumstances and the district court finding that it isn't there. I think that is the bigger issue, is whether or not there was a substantial change in circumstances. In this case, we believe there was one, and that gets more to this first impression argument. There doesn't seem to be case law that explicitly addresses this, whether or not worsening conditions would satisfy the substantial change in circumstances argument. We believe, though, that kind of the history of the family court case law seems to imply to lean towards that, and that we don't leave children in bad situations for their behaviors to worsen just so they continue to have these additional harms or behaviors. The point of 518.18 is to stop that, is to prevent further harm. And the district court's interpretation basically says the children could continue to get worse, but because they were in therapy originally, they will not ever find a change in circumstances unless there's some substantial triggering event. And that does not seem to comport with our other case laws. I think what was heavily cited.
So counsel, I don't quite read the district court's decision, I think, the same way that you do. I read the district court's decision as not rejecting that worsening behavior. And I think what you're alluding to here is that the children are there. They have been in therapy for quite a bit period of time, that they are not progressing in the therapy. And that's what you mean by worsening behavior, I think. And the district court acknowledged that that was mother's claim, but indicated that in reviewing the therapy records that were attached to and submitted to the court, they didn't really support mother's claim that the behavior of the children had worsened, and that in fact that some of the therapy records showed improvement. So I'm not quite sure that we get to the legal issue that you're describing, even if I did think it was a question of first impression. Help me understand that. I think you maybe read the district court's decision differently than I do.
I think we do read it differently, Your Honor. I think there's a heavily relied upon on Rodan's, which is talking about this continuing issue. But in that case that the district court seems to cite and really discuss, there is no discussion of those additional behaviors. It was a motion to based on a child's preference and their continued desire to want to live somewhere else, but that doesn't show actual worsening behavior. However, this is where the district court is required to find all statements made under the moving party, which was my client's affidavit, as true, and to disregard any comments or statements made that would go against the behaviors. I agree that some of the notes said there had been some improvement, but that by itself doesn't mean that endangerment still can't apply. That's why you look at the conditions and factors. There was significant behaviors, and specifically it was cited that the children's behaviors were becoming worse. It's not just that the children weren't progressing in their therapy. Some of their actual behaviors and emotional behaviors specifically were worse than when they started. This included multiple tantrums in a day, biting, harming insects. None of those things were addressed in the original court order, and none of those things were cited to be instances that were occurring. I agree that if that was discussed in the original order, that the children had some of these tendencies, then maybe there could be an argument. However, in this case, there wasn't. There was discussion that the children were in therapy, and there wasn't much discussion on those behaviors, but there wasn't evidence that was presented that said that these behaviors weren't worsening. And in fact, mother cites that they are. And there were different conditions that were occurring. And as I said, I believe the children specifically in a 2020 diagnostic assessment had 3 to 5 tantrums per day and a fascination, like I said, with harming insects, that one of the children began bedwetting, which was not something that had happened prior. These are the conditions that we do think are a matter of first impression of, yes, they may be conditions that maybe were there, but we can't confirm, but they were definitely worsening over time based on the therapist's statements. And because of that, we think when you look at it as an objective behavioral situation in aggregate, not just piecemeal, but in aggregate, most of the behaviors were worsening. There were a few that were potentially getting better, but overall, the children were not in a situation that was beneficial to them. It was endangering them because you wouldn't have children starting to wet the bed or having increased tantrum levels or starting to harm animals and things of that nature. That is all.
Ms. Olson, could you be specific? It would help us to be specific about the evidence other than mother's affidavit that supports this point. And I guess, in other words, did the therapist use those words to say it's worsening, or is that mother's interpretation or characterization of the therapist's point of view? It would help to kind of like parse out, the different sources of evidence. I mean, on the mother's affidavit on the one hand, and the other, the treatment records on the other hand, which is, because the district court made a distinction between them.
Absolutely. I don't remember in the actual assessments that were given, the 2020 diagnostic assessment, which would be, I believe, on our addendum 5, that was what they cited the actual behaviors themselves. And yes, there is the qualifying of the behaviors worsening, but there's no contradictory evidence within the diagnostic assessment itself that was a behavior that had occurred at the beginning and it stayed the same. They said that specifically that the children were having 3 to 5 tantrums per day, and that was not something that had been listed prior, that one of the children had a fascination with harming insects. Again, this was not a condition that was ever described prior or in any of the records.
I'd like to stop you just for a minute. So addendum 5 is the 5th page of mother's affidavit. She makes reference to some of these other documents. Are those documents in the record as well?
I believe so, Your Honor. I believe the diagnostic assessment was in her original affidavit, and it would be doc ID 101 on the record. That's what I believe was the proper citation. A lot of this is the 2020 diagnostic assessment because that's where most of the major conditions were. The other child began wetting himself, lack of eating, and these issues were specifically cited to only occur in father's care. That was also that document, ID 101. It's on page 5. It's within the same paragraph. I believe they're talking about both children. And then the other child had problems with anxiety, aggressive behavior, and then oppositional defiant behavior, which had not been addressed earlier. Again, this was all within the diagnostic assessment. That's on our addendum, page 7. It is still that doc ID 101, and I believe it's paragraph 20. And I believe we're citing the assessment within the affidavit. These were quotes from that assessment itself. And again, when you look at these behaviors, you have to look at the prior order and what had been found and discussed, and none of these behaviors had been. So these would be new. These would be new to the court. They were not there prior, at least not in any findings or filings that I could find in the prior record. And because of that, we do think that condition is worsening. Because again, if you're having therapy, sustained therapy, it's understandable that things improve, some things stay the same, and maybe some things worsen, but the sheer amount of behaviors that are different than what had been originally discussed, and the court notes that that's mother's claim, but doesn't actually note whether or not these conditions were there before, besides saying, well, there was therapy, some conditions have been worsening. He doesn't cite that this was a condition prior in the prior order.
So counsel, the other comment that the district court made in the decision was to, and I'm not exactly sure that the district court is quoting the same documents that you are, the same therapy records. So I'll need to look into that, or maybe you can help me if you know. But the district court did quote some therapy notes stating that it, as to child two, that the symptoms have lessened infrequently, but still continue and are intense around times of transition. And then as to child one, and this is from 2021, noting that that child has shown good improvement. So I guess part of what concerns me is you're asking us to accept mother's evaluation of the therapy notes as to whether the conditions have worsened or not, where the district court looked behind mother's affidavit to the record submitted and said, well, that's not what the therapists are saying. And if you want to address this in your rebuttal, go right ahead. I appreciate this is a lot of information.
I can start addressing it now and certainly can continue in my rebuttal. I would note that the law in Boland requires the district court to follow the moving party's affidavit and disregard any contradictory information. So no matter what, it should have been looked at objectively by the point of view. And I see I'm out of time. May I finish my sentence? Thank you. What I was saying was, no matter what, objectively, the district court needed to look at mother's affidavit and her statements of what was occurring. The fact that the therapist mentioned symptoms were lessening, again, that's somewhat in a bubble. And like I said, I'll further address kind of the history of that during my rebuttal. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Olson. Counsel for respondent, you may introduce yourself and your client and begin your argument.
Your honors, opposing counsel, I am attorney Christopher Frank on behalf of Christopher Heinrichs, who is the respondent in this case. I apologize. I think I'm coming down with a little something. So I'm sorry if I'm hoarse or quiet here, but I think I will begin, since it's fresh in our minds here, with the second issue regarding the worsening behaviors. I would just like to touch that prior to the 2019 custody order, opposing counsel claimed that the court had never seen any of these behaviors or made findings of the behaviors and just referenced that they were in therapy. I have been on this case the entire time since the party's divorce. And prior to the 2019 order, these similar behaviors were brought up in our filings and motions and memorandum prior to that 2019 order. So the court did see many of these same behaviors. I don't believe any of those affidavits were submitted as part of the appeals material, but they would be part of the court record. And I think kind of the main issue for the Boland standard of taking the moving parties affidavits as true, the main issue we're looking at here is whether the court can use the moving parties supplemental filings, and in this case would be those therapist records that refute her own either interpretations or statements in her affidavit. The court made a specific finding that it did not rely on respondents' affidavits when making their determination that there was not worsening behaviors, and specifically referenced those therapy notes submitted by mother as kind of a basis behind not finding worsening conditions or worsening behaviors. I know we already referenced I believe it was the 2020 diagnostic that made that specific finding that the district court had in its memo that according to the client's caregiver, these symptoms have lessened in frequency, but still continue and are intense around times of transition. The court appropriately considered petitioner's affidavit as well as professional records attached to it for context. So the court was not relying on any of father's affidavits to refute any of mother's affidavits, but rather mother's own filings.
So, Mr. Frank, would you respond to appellant counsel for appellant's argument that, well, the district court is quoting, accurately quoting the overall tenor of the assessments for these children, i.e. improvement or worsening, that piece, that the district court doesn't dive into the details about the specific behaviors. And according to counsel for appellant, some of the behaviors were new, and you heard the examples given. So would you address that in light of your review of the record in the case? Thank you.
Yes, it would appear that the court did not decide to dive directly into what could have been new or could have been the same. I would argue that if you go back and look at the pre-2019 filings for that 2019 custody order, that many of these similar behaviors are brought up. Now, they may not be the exact same, but I would say that, you know, these behavioral issues of anxiety around transitions and not eating or sleeping well shortly after transitions were all part of the 2019 filings. And that the issue or the concerns and behaviors brought up in this new motion by appellant, these are just conditions that are very similar in nature. So even if they are slightly different, if, you know, if he was cruel to an ant or whatever happened with the insect, he had not been cruel to any animals. They are all, that these would be those same types of behaviors. And the court found that, you know, there wasn't a worsening or distinction between those behaviors prior to the 2019 order compared to the current motion.
Mr. Frank, I leaving this topic, but we can always return to it, of course. Appellant's third argument raises what Ms. Olson says was a novel issue. First of all, my question for you is, do we need to reach that issue or decide that question of law that's identified? And secondly, if we were to address it, how should we resolve it?
Well, I believe in my filings, I argued that whether that worsening conditions would be a change in circumstance from our argument is moot, since the district court did not abuse its discretion in finding that there was not a worsening behavior or change in circumstance. So at that point, the court would not have to reach that argument. I do agree that it does seem to be an issue of first impression, as I was not able to find any related case law either. Respondent would argue that the court does not have to reach that issue, since the worsening behavior determination by the district court was not an abuse of discretion, and therefore it would end at that point.
If we just assume for the moment that we do reach it, must reach it, then how would we analyze that issue and how would we resolve it?
Well, respondent would argue that I suppose the court would have to analyze those 2019 filings if they are part of the transcript sent over from the court, and make a determination of whether the claims by mother actually do fit, and the submissions in the therapy records actually do show a level of worsening circumstance substantial enough that it would fit a change in circumstance. I guess obviously if it's, you know, there has to be some, I would argue, some sort of substantiability requirement there, because if it's only 1% worse than previous behaviors, you know, there's kind of a balance there of that one. I would argue that that would not, you know, be a change in circumstance, but if it's vastly worsening behaviors, then obviously there'd probably be a basis for a change in circumstance at that point.
No, it sounds like what you're saying, Mr. Frank, is since this court isn't a fact-finding court, that there would need to be a remand if the court was going to have to go back into the filings from 2019 to make those kinds of determinations on that. Would you agree that then if we followed your argument here, that a remand would be necessary to allow that fact-finding to occur in the district court?
I believe I would agree with that, Your Honor. I would add on top of that, that still would only be, one of those factors of the endangerment standard, which the court found other factors lacking as well. And so that even if that issue of worsening behavior was a change in circumstance, there's other failures of those four factors as well. That would be a kind of a waste of judicial resources to remand it back for something that wouldn't change the outcome anyway if there were other failed factors. Which is why I would further reiterate that I believe that's why that issue is moot at this point.
Am I correct in assuming that both parties made arguments to the district court concerning all four of the factors?
I believe so. I believe the two factors that the court didn't touch on were for reason that it was, those weren't the very important factors. I don't know if the court was just inferring there, either not being present or what. I believe it focused on the two main ones that were actually at issue. But there was not serious discussion on all four of the issues, I don't believe.
So, counsel, I'm having a little trouble following your argument that we wouldn't have to reach that change in circumstances argument based on worsening behavior here, because it seems to me like the district court's analysis on the two factors it did discuss are quite connected, because the district court, the second aspect was that the district court found the children were not endangered, again, based on its review of the therapy records that were submitted. And that, according to the district court, didn't support or even contradicted mother's affidavit. So I guess I'm not quite sure I'm following you. I certainly follow the first part, of your position, but I'm not quite sure that I follow the second, that we wouldn't have to remand if we decide that the district court erred on the change in circumstances analysis. So help me out there. Maybe I'm missing something.
So I believe the factors that were touched were factors one, a change in their own circumstances of the children, and three, the present environment endangers the physical health, emotional health, emotional development of the children. So I suppose if the argument that worsening behaviors is a change in circumstance, which I believe is what appellant's argument was, that's only touching on the first factor there. I guess it is very closely related to factor three as well. But that's what I was kind of getting at there, is that it was only touching on factor number one.
Mr. Frank, let me draw your attention to the third factor, whether the child is endangered. Could you please just summarize your arguments as to why the district court is correct that there is no endangerment here?
I believe the district court correctly relied on mother's supplemental filings of the therapist records to show that these symptoms were becoming less frequent and that the children were getting better. And I believe they relied on that the district court relied on that when finding that there were not worsening behaviors. And that those worsening behaviors were not a change in circumstance for that first factor. Getting into factor number three, you know, these children had, we made these same arguments about these same behaviors that children were having, which were the reason they started therapy back prior to the 2019 order. And so the court had been aware of these behaviors that entire time. And at that time, it made the ruling that father was going to be the primary residence during the school year based on the filings at that time. And at this point, the court did not see any worsening behaviors that would, you know, get past that prima facie standard for a change in custody. I believe you were muted there, Your Honor, if you said something.
I apologize. I have a somewhat tangential question, which is I'm wondering whether this judge has been assigned to this case from the beginning or whether a different judge presided over it previously.
Yes, it has been the same judge on all the relevant orders. I see I am almost out of time here. I believe we kind of touched on the first issue, the proper findings for endangerment, and I would order that the court's order speaks for itself, where the district court judge did make those findings that he only used the mother's filings when making his determination. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Frank. Ms. Olson, as I said earlier, you have an opportunity for rebuttal argument, and you are allotted 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just touching, I think, on the 2019 order, because there's a lot of discussion on this order and what was found and not found. However, you have to look at the 2019 findings by the district court to determine the change of circumstances. We don't look at all the prior filings. You look at the 2019 order, which is what is right now the custody and parenting time order. And then if there were different findings from that, specifically, I believe that is, and I wanted to make sure I had it right, it's document index 76. And that was an August 30th, 2019 order. And relating to mental health, the district court never mentions any of the conditions that are discussed in the 2020 diagnostic assessment. It says the children have documented mental health needs, that there's a discussion of anxiety and PTSD. These are not the things that were discussed, though, of the new conditions, which is those extra tantrums that were occurring, the harming of animals. That's not discussed at all in the 2019 order. So to claim or to make the argument, well, we look at all the prior filings, that's not actually accurate. What we look at are the prior findings of the district court in the prior custody order, and then determine what new conditions or circumstances could be there. That's why we disagree with the district court that there hasn't been a substantial change in circumstances. In 2020, there is an increase of situations, like I said, tantrums, wetting themselves, harming insects and animals. Those are all things that now are being told are occurring and are occurring in a more frequent rate. Now in 2021, that's starting to lessen a little bit, but that doesn't mean that at the time of 2019, those situations or those circumstances weren't new to the court, because the court didn't find any of those conditions or circumstances prior. Now, while it could be lessening a little bit, I don't believe that the therapist said these conditions aren't a problem or they're not an issue. That is why we find that the third factor of endangerment is there, and it should have been addressed by the district court. Because clearly there's this change in circumstances, because the 2019 order doesn't discuss these. We think they're substantial because a child having significant emotional situations such as wetting oneself or harming insects or having tantrums, those are emotional issues. Those are certainly something that is substantial to that child's emotional health and well-being. It becomes endangerment because the cause of it seems to only be occurring at the father's home, though there isn't a specific triggering event that can be determined by either party.
Did the district court, let me stop you there, Ms. Olson. Did the district court agree with that, that the cause can only be at the father's home? I thought the district court identified some evidence that there were potential causes at either home, at both homes.
The district court made that finding, but it is an improper finding because it's using information that goes against the moving party's affidavit. Mother noted that none of these issues had been occurring in her home, and the district court disregards that and says that I believe he implies that it is occurring in both households. Based on therapist notes, but again, this goes against what the actual affidavit says, where she observes none of that happens.
So, Ms. Olson, I've heard you say this a couple times, and I want to make sure I understand your argument. Are you saying that it was that the district court was required to accept mother's affidavit at face value and disregard the therapy records that she attached to her affidavit that may contradict what she said in the affidavit? Is that your argument, that it was improper for the court to consider those therapy records that she provided?
I think there is a misunderstanding, so I'll clarify. We are saying that you have to assume everything that the moving party's affidavit says is true. We do think that the court needs to look at the therapist's notes. We disagree with the conclusions that the court made that the behaviors that are being talked about are lessening. And the reason why we're saying that is because the court isn't looking at it from based on the 2019 findings and based on the actual behaviors that were listed. Yes, there was a lessening in 2021, but between 2019 and 2021, and I see I'm out of time. May I please finish my sentence? Thank you.
Please complete your answer.
Between 2019 and 2021, there are additional conditions that were never discussed or brought or found by the district court, which would be new and worsening conditions based on mother's statements. Just because symptoms may be lessening, I think that's the qualifying issue. The therapist saying that the symptoms are lessening, but that's lessening from 2020, not from the 2019. And mother is saying that the behaviors were getting worse overall within those 2 years, meaning that there was increased tantrums. There were issues with these insect harming animals, other things of that nature. So that's more what we're talking about, that it was an improper finding, not that he shouldn't be using the therapist notes.
You may sum up.
Thank you. Based on Minnesota case law and kind of the history and interpretations we've had, we believe that a worsening condition is a substantial change in circumstances in certain criteria and areas. In this specific case, we believe that that is true and that the court should have found substantial change in circumstances and completed all four factors. If the court had done so, that an evidentiary hearing would have been warranted. So we're asking for the court to either reverse and remand to get those additional factors so we could have a proper appellate analysis, or preferably reverse and have an instruction to the court that worsening conditions are endangerment or can be endangerment and have that properly addressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms.